Welcome to the Open House Podcast. Conversations exploring life, faith, and hope. Discover more interviews at openhousecommunity.com.au.
Sleep. We all need it. We spend a lot of time doing it. Truth is, we probably need more of it. We certainly wish our children could be better at it. In Sleep Awareness Week, we wanted to take a good hard look at children and teenagers and the contentious battleground of sleep. Dr. Chris Seaton is a paediatric sleep specialist from the Woolcott Institute and the Westmead Children's Hospital. He says that a lack of sleep in children and young people can be the cause of serious behaviour disorders. Certainly, it can also make them worse. It can even lead to them being misdiagnosed with mental illness. He says it can cause children and young people to act out of character. In fact, he once had a sleep-deprived patient who firebombed their teacher's car. Our conversation with Chris Seaton certainly goes to some scary places, but it also contains helpful advice for parents.
Thanks for having me, Stephen.
Firstly, what's going on in sleep? Why is sleep so important?
It affects a whole lot of body systems physically, and it affects your mental health, your resilience to stress, even things like your blood pressure, your blood sugar, your eating habits. So sleep deprivation has this flow-on effect to a whole bunch of body systems that we're continuing to discover.
And why is that the case? So what's the body, what's the brain doing during the sleep phases?
Well, sleep's really restorative. It's essential to give the body a rest. And without sleep, the body literally wears out. And I mean, if you take it to the end point, the worst result of sleep deprivation is death. And then there's things that are severe health problems, like heart attacks and strokes. And so I think we always think of sleep as just something we do. You know, it's just you sleep 7-8 hours, you're awake for 16 hours, and that's just the way it is. And because sleep is free and we all do it, it's somewhat, I think, undervalued. So the benefits of sleep are great, and the problems with bad sleep are pretty bad.
So there are some physical things going on for the body during sleep, but what's at the same time happening for the mind then?
Well, in terms of the mind, I mean, we do a lot of research in teenagers, high school students, about sleep and learning and moods. And what we know is that if you, for instance, if you don't sleep well, you don't learn things. And so one of the functions of sleep is to file memories into long-term storage. So if you or I are chatting today and we have a bad night's sleep tonight, neither of us will remember what we talked about.
Oh, wow.
So you really need sleep to consolidate learning. And teachers are sort of very aware of this. They say, look, a lot of their tired kids, they don't absorb the information that well, but then the next day and the next week, it's all forgotten. In terms of mental health, we all know if we have a good sleep, we're in a good mood, and if we have a bad sleep, we're in a bad mood. So kids and adults that are prone to mood disorders, if you've got a genetic predisposition, for example, to depression, the two things that will bring out your depression are stress and poor sleep. Particularly if you put those two things together, it's a real time bomb. So we see this a lot in our kids coming up for the high school certificate. They might have a genetic vulnerability to a mood disorder. Mm-hmm. They get stressed by their exams coming up. They sleep less because they've got to study more. Mm-hmm. And this is a sort of toxic mix. And it results in, you know, we see kids that can't do their high school certificate because of that mix. We see a lot of school absenteeism. A lot of the boys we see have risk-taking behavior. So sleep deprivation in boys is a little bit like alcohol. It makes you do things, risky things, that you wouldn't otherwise do.
And not in girls?
Not so much in girls, which is interesting.
Yeah. Do we know why that's the case?
We think that in girls, what happens in boys, we think, is that when they're sleep-deprived, what we call the prefrontal cortex, that's the front of the brain that controls what we call executive function. It's the stuff that differentiates us from the apes. You know, it's the things that control moral and ethical decisions. So we think that sleep deprivation affects the prefrontal cortex, more so in boys. So it means that this area of the brain that can suppress doing stupid things doesn't work well. Again, it's the same with alcohol. We think with girls what happens is the bit of the brain that tends to fire up in them when they're sleep deprived is called the amygdala. And the amygdala is sort of the emotional controller of the brain. So girls who are sleep deprived in general tend to get more emotional and less risk-taking, and boys tend to get more into risk-taking behavior. So we think it's the way the brain responds to sleep deprivation that's different between the genders.
Our guest on Open House is Dr. Christopher Seaton, a pediatric respiratory and sleep medicine physician, confirming a number of stereotypes, but they're stereotypes, I suppose, because they're true. When I was at university and at school, it was regarded as a fairly simple proposition. If you were studying, you needed to take more coffee and stay up all night and you'd swat. Based on what you've just said, clearly that's a bad thing. It wasn't every night, though, because now we have the perfect storm that I didn't have to confront when I was younger, when I was a teenager. The perfect storm being a very large number of digital devices and a culture that expects you to be online all the time, with this new thing, FOMO, the fear of missing out. How is that affecting our young people?
This is affecting our young people in a really big way. We know that over the last 10 years, sleep deprivation in teenagers has doubled from about 35% of kids to 70%.
Oh, my goodness.
And the main reason for that increase, not the only reason, but the most important reason is the increasing use of screens at night, and the screens have become more portable, they're multimodal, kids are using them in the bedroom. And, yeah, very much unlike you and I, Stephen, we didn't have that that temptation or that opportunity, so we didn't develop the addiction to the screens, the fun component of screens. And as you mentioned, the FOMO, the fear of missing out, that is, if you're not socially connected all night, every night, then you may be missing out on important social information, and then you may be stigmatized for not knowing that information the next day.
So is it in those cases the screens themselves that are doing some damage to the brain? There's some evidence that the stimulation is changing the way our brains develop. Or is it the sleep deprivation, or is it both of those things together?
Well, it's both of those things. So there's sort of a couple of effects of screens. One's the blue light effect. So screens have blue light because blue light makes stuff on screens clearer, gives better clarity. But blue light is the part of the light spectrum that's worst for your sleep. So when you're exposed to blue light, your brain gets a message that it's daytime. And the brain reduces the production of your sleep hormone, which is called melatonin. So in fact, we use blue light to wake kids up in the morning. And using it at night really sends a signal to their brain to wake up. But additionally, screens are fun and they're excitatory. So if you're doing fun stuff on a screen late at night, your brain produces a lot of neurochemicals that are wakeful, things like dopamine and adrenaline and noradrenaline. And the brain then gets conditioned to be more and more wakeful at night because of these neurochemicals. I think, too, what's happened is the portability of the devices means that kids are more likely to use them in or on the bed. And that creates a problem called conditioned arousal. It's sort of, again, psychologically telling the brain that the bed's a place for wakeful activity rather than a place for sleep. So even when the kids stop their screens, their brain may be conditioned or trained to lie awake in bed. So there's three or four components to this, and that's why it's such a sort of powerful destroyer of or sabotager of sleep.
Well, lest anybody think that this is not a very serious condition, you've treated people who have had extreme versions of sleep deprivation caused by some of the things we've discussed, including someone who firebombed his teacher's car?
Yeah, I mean, this is an example of a boy with risk-taking behavior, and when we treated him and fixed his sleep deprivation, he was a different kid. When we met him, he was this aggressive, out-of-control kid who had been suspended from his local high school for firebombing his teacher's car, and he did that because he was chronically so tired in the classroom, one of the teachers kept pestering him to wake up.
Gosh.
and sort of label him as lazy rather than sleepy. He wasn't lazy, he was just sleepy.
Yes.
So in retribution, this boy foolishly put a rag into the down the petrol spout of his teacher's car.
Well, yes, that's never going to end well, is it?
No, and I mean, you know, that is an extreme example. But
so, but you're saying that that wasn't his underlying personality, but then the world might treat him as just a, you know, a young criminal in the making, put him through the juvenile justice system, where he'll just fulfil everyone's expectations of him, and that's the end of it.
Yeah, and he became a bit of, you know, when we treated his sleep deprivation, fixed him up, he was the nicest kid, and he became a bit of an ambassador for us. He sort of would come to the kids' hospital and meet other teenagers who were sleep deprived and say, look, this is what I did, and this is my journey, and now I'm good, and he would encourage other kids to do the same. Now, he's an extreme example, but we do see a lot of kids who have been suspended from school because of absenteeism. That is, they're so tired they can't get up in the morning, their parents can't get them up, and they're repetitively either absent from school or late from school.
Well, what other disorders do you see in your clinical practice that have been misdiagnosed that have effectively just been caused by or partly caused by a sleep disorder?
The things we see, Stephen, usually are things like depression, anxiety, and attention deficit disorder. What happens when you're sleep deprived is your mood is altered, and if you've got a propensity to become depressed or anxious, sleep deprivation will bring that out.
Right.
So what we...
So it's both cause and effect, and then it adds to the effect. Yep.
That's right. It's cause and effect, or it's chicken and egg. And the way we explain it to people is that the relationship between moods and sleep is bidirectional. What a lot of people do is if they see a teenager that's depressed, they try and treat the depression, but they don't talk much about sleep deprivation. So trying to fix depression in someone who's sleep deprived is pretty futile because, you know, you're treating the egg rather than the chicken in some cases. Equally, so depressed people have trouble sleeping. People who have trouble sleeping will become depressed. Same applies with anxiety. If one of us gets anxious temporarily, one of the effects of it is that we may not be able to get to sleep.
Sure.
And then if we get poor sleep that night, that makes us more anxious the next day.
Sure.
So when we treat sleep deprivation, it's really important to treat the mood component or the mental health component as well as the physical and the behavioral components. We see a lot of younger kids with misdiagnosed attention deficit disorder. And so kids with ADD and ADHD, as you know, little kids become hyperactive. And what's interesting in young kids also, not in teenagers, but in preschoolers and toddlers, the tireder they become, the more hyperactive they become.
Hmm.
You or I will become lethargic when we're tired or sleeping. Little kids paradoxically increase their activity levels in the face of tiredness. So a young child with sleep deprivation can look very similar to a child with attention deficit disorder.
So if a parent is, and some parents do, look for diagnoses of ADHD for their children for various reasons, maybe they just want this to stop. They want someone to give them a diagnosis so they can move on. But would you say that the doctor needs to be very careful not to misdiagnose or miss what might actually be a sleep-caused problem?
That's right. And I mean, most of the doctors that we work with at the Children's Hospital at Westmead are well aware of that. So if they see a child with ADHD symptoms, they will inquire about sleep. You know, what time does your child go to bed? Are they getting enough sleep? Do they wake at night? Do they snore, which may interrupt their sleep?
Mm-hmm.
So those doctors will ask the right questions about sleep, and it's important to consider sleep as an issue in any child with ADHD type symptoms. Equally, I occasionally see children who have ADHD symptoms and they don't have any sleep problems at all, and I would refer them to an ADHD specialist to say, look, sleep is not an issue in this child. However, their behaviour and their learning is very poor.
Mm-hmm.
Could you assess them for ADHD? So it does work both ways because the daytime symptoms are so similar.
Well, now, almost by definition, the child that's depressed, the child that's anxious, the child that is oppositional, who has behaviour difficulties, who defies their parents, without putting any judgment on that child, by definition, it's going to be very difficult, isn't it, for a parent to bring them to a practitioner who can help them with their sleep problems.
Yeah, I mean, you've hit the nail on the head, Stephen. That's one of the big problems, and one of the we get a lot of calls from parents who can't even get their teenage son or daughter to our clinic.
That's it.
Because you know, teenagers hate going to doctors, and we have this term where a teenager's sitting in our consulting room with me on one side of the desk and with a parent on each shoulder, and we say to them, "Do you feel like a therapeutic prisoner?" Which means, do you feel like you're sort of imprisoned in this box with three people trying to force you to do things? And a lot of teenagers say, yes, that's how I feel.
Ouch.
The second thing they do is they normalize their sleep issue. So because sleep deprivation is so common, 70% of teenagers are sleep deprived. Most kids that we see don't have a great insight into their tiredness. They know they're tired, but all their mates are tired as well. So it's sort of normalized. So trying to get insight into teenagers is really important, often takes lots of chatting. The second thing we try and do is to motivate them to change. And it's really important to realize, and we say this to parents all the time, they say, why doesn't my teenage son or daughter know this? I mean, teenagers are really poor managers of sleep. They're hopeless. They're like toddlers. They won't manage, in general, they won't manage their own sleep, so their parents need to jump in and help. Mm. And so a lot of our work is sort of, I mean, we obviously talk a lot to teenagers, but we also talk to parents about how to negotiate this sort of difficult process of trying to do things for which, as a parent, you may be hated. And certainly screen separation is, because of the addiction of it, screen separation at night is really difficult. We do have enforced ways of doing it, though. I mean, we do a couple of things. So we have an online treatment program, and this sort of avoids the feeling of therapeutic imprisonment for teenagers. And the online program is similar to face-to-face, but without coming to meet the doctor. And it's good, particularly for people who live, you know, away from major centres or away from Sydney.
Yes, and because it's a norm now, the way we interact with people is through our screen. So that's a very clever use of that same technology.
That's called Sleep Shack. So that's really appealing to teenagers. It's not that appealing to parents, but teenagers are much more likely to do therapy when we prescribe it online. Mm. We have an association with a group called Family Zone, and they're a great group of people. They're a group of experts, psychologists, cyber experts, and they've developed basically a content and time management system for screens. So Family Zone automatically manages content according to the age of the child. So the restriction on, say, a six-year-old is quite marked in terms of content. Mm. And then the time management basically is the parent saying to their son or daughter, I want screens off by 10:30 at night. And if that negotiation fails, then it can be enforced electronically. And in fact, if that code is broken, if a child goes on screen after lights out, the parent gets a notification on their phone to say, hey, your son or daughter has gone beyond the agreed time for screens. So that can be done by negotiation or by force. Mm-hmm. And even talking about this, sometimes the threat of something like Family Zone can jig a teenager into better sleep behavior because they don't really want their parents to control totally their screen behavior.
No,
it gives them some independence. If they can make part of the decision, that's much better for everyone.
It's a delicate proposition, though. I mean, I really am thankful to God for people like you. And it's very clear from our conversation that you have such a gentle and beautiful manner. I can imagine young people trusting you. I just am very thankful to God that we have people, medical practitioners like this, who can be sensitive to what's going on for a young person and help them. Talk to me about some of your success stories. And what's it like for you? Is it a satisfying field that you're engaged in?
Oh, yeah. It's great. It's just part of our work. We deal with other things like life-threatening things, like risk of cot death and things like that. But the work with sleep deprivation in teenagers is the most challenging part of our work because it's hard and complex. And it's fun because it's challenging. And we have failures. We have, and it's interesting looking at the data, our failure rate is higher. We fail more in girls than boys, and we don't know quite why this is. We fail more as the kids get older. So, from year 9 up to year 12, our failure rate is higher than in years 7 and 8. And we're sort of constantly working at ways of, lessening our failure rate. And it's not just me. We have a team. So we've got a couple of fantastic sleep psychologists that I work with at a place called the Wolcott Clinic at Sydney University. And they are great at getting into the heads and minds of young people. You know, from a psychological point of view, working out what makes them tick, working out why they won't do therapy, giving them insight, giving them motivation to even take step one in the treatment. So a lot of work is sort of in an interdisciplinary team where we bounce off each other, we have different expertise, but it's really it's got to be a team approach. And then, some parents can do some of this well with their teenagers and other parents are not so good. So part of it is coaching the parents to be more empowered to do the treatment. So it's fun and challenging, and it's in one way I get scared that sleep deprivation's increasing so much, but in another way, someone said to me recently, well, if there were no sleep deprived teenagers, what would you do?
Oh.
And I said, well, I just treat the kids who are under 13. But there are sort of ideas floating. A lot of American schools now have improved sleep deprivation by making school starting times later in high school.
Oh, yes,
and
please.
That fits in a bit better with teenage body clocks, which run late. It doesn't solve the problem totally, but it lessens the problem.
Yes.
And what's interesting is when you do that, kids don't stay up later. They still go to bed at around about the same time, but they get the ability to sleep in.
Yes. Dr. Chris Seaton is our guest. He's a pediatric respiratory and sleep medicine physician. One last thing. We've been speaking about sleep deprivation and sleep issues amongst young people, and we've pretty much fingered technology as being a big part of the problem. There are other issues, though. There are physical issues, including sleep apnea, often associated with older men, but just as much a problem for some young people. What would you say to parents who think that their younger kids are not engaged with screens or having FOMO, fear of missing out. What would you say to those people with younger kids who are suffering those types of sleep problems?
Some parents say to us, they thought snoring was normal. And I think the key message is that snoring's not normal. So in young kids, kids usually preschool age, toddler age, where snoring is common, 5 or 6% of kids will snore on a regular basis. And about half of those will have sleep apnea, which is stopping breathing in deep sleep. So sleep apnea will cause sleep deprivation, ADHD type symptoms, temper tantrums, meltdowns in toddlers. It causes clumsiness. So it causes kids to be tired. So what we encourage parents to do is to actually come and see us if their child snores. And we do a test called a sleep study, which is the same test you would have as an adult if you snore, to work out, is this just simple snoring, which is fine, or is it blocked oxygen, sleep apnea? The kids with sleep apnea typically have big tonsils in the back of their throat, and the big tonsils are blocking the oxygen, and if that is the case proven on a sleep test, then the typical treatment is to have the tonsils out. You've got to be careful, though, to not to say don't take tonsils out of all children who snore, because about half of them don't have sleep apnea. So we encourage people to go to their family doctor. Don't let the doctor say, oh, we'll wait and see. Come to one of the sleep clinics. We'll have a look and a talk, do a sleep study, and work out whether it is a physical problem or not.
Well, we like to look at life through the lens of faith and look for hope on this program. That's one of our objectives, and you've given us reason for hope tonight. I know that many parents of kids of all ages worry about this issue on a daily basis, and sometimes feel like they're alone. But you've given us reason to hope. We have listeners right across Australia. They're not necessarily able to just chuff off down to Westmead or wherever. They're in capital cities, they're in bush areas. So where can they go online to find out a little bit more about where to get help, the sort of help that you're talking about tonight?
Certainly, Stephen, online we've got an email facility on our treatment program for teenagers called Sleep Shack. So it's all one word. You can just Google it. So if parents have concerns, but they're not sure, particularly if, as you say, if they're in the bush or peripheral areas, the first step or first two steps would either to be see your local doctor and or send us an email and we can direct you. I got an email this morning from someone in South Australia and I don't even know where the town is, but I was able to direct them, based on the information, I was able to direct them to a really good sleep clinic in Adelaide. Sometimes what we get is information where we can say to parents, look, this is a sleep issue, but it's one of the sleep things that won't hurt your child, and we can reassure them. And an example of that's a thing called night terrors. Night terrors are common in little kids, and they're screaming episodes where the child is asleep. They appear to be awake, but they're asleep. It's a little bit like sleepwalking or sleep talking. We can ascertain that often by email, phone calls. We can get parents to send us a video of the episode. We say, look, that's a night terror. We can reassure you that that's okay. It's like sleepwalking or sleep talking. It's a bit noisy, but you don't have to come and see us. You don't have to have a sleep study, because a night terror does not cause sleep deprivation.
Wow.
But there are some things we can, nip in the bud and prevent parents coming a long way unnecessarily.
Well, Dr. Chris Seaton, thank you again for what you do, and thank you for joining us on Open House this evening.
Well, thanks, Stephen, for what you do and for inviting me to speak. I really appreciate it.